Welcome everyone back to CEO Cheat Sheet Podcast. Today, we have a new episode with amazing guest Alex Kleisinger, who is running the sales augmentation company called Elysium. Hi Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks Ola. How are you?
Oh great, I can't stop thinking about what sales augmentation company means. Can you elaborate?
Oh, look, that's a great question, right? Because sales augmentation is a bit of a kind of a vague term, what it really means. But when you think of it, in essence, it actually means everything whatever requires to do sales. Because there's so many out and about a consultancy agency, they're just focusing on certain industries, could be marketing, lead generation, sales conversion, fractional sales management, sales coaching. But at the end of the day, you need all these components to be a part of a one single puzzle. Yeah, so sales augmentation, we work with the client, we see where they have spots where we need, where we can help, and we just augment them with our own resources, with our knowledge, and with our expertise.
Oh, that's awesome. So potentially, if let's say I'm running the business and I want to like scale my sales, that would be the right way to go call Elysium and ask them, how can I do this more efficiently? Or I can also start it like directly from scratch when I have like little knowledge about the sales, you know, have some connections, networks, sold a few, I don't know, product services, and I can have an educational resource. So is it both or?
Look, the thing is, the reality is the businesses, they come up at different life cycle stages, right? Sometimes it's good to think about sales, obviously, whenever you just start a business. Mm-hmm. It's whenever you have a great idea and you want to reshape the world with your startup product. So you need to think about, you know, how do you actually sell the product and bring the revenue in? On the other side, there are lots of companies at the moment that have been operating on the market for many, many years, been very, very successful, but the market conditions change. At some point, they need to reinvent themselves. So this is kind of ever-evolving process where you do something, you did it for many years, but now you need to think, rethink, you know, the strategy, onboard new tools. And of course, with all the AI strategy, there's lots of unknown components, which is kind of coming in and disrupting the sales industry as well.
Okay, that's interesting. So it feels like it would be very wise to incorporate experts' advice in the very beginning, because I think many businesses are focused on what they do and they do not necessarily have enough experience to be like up to date, follow the trend, especially with AI, as you mentioned. To me, it sounds like if I'm about to make my sales consistent, it's the right thing to use such services, right?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, you can, you know, sales, it's a bit of a generic topic. Of course, you can do it yourself, but sometimes it just will require lots of trial and error to figure the right things. You can onboard in-house full-time resources as well, bring in VP of sales, head of growth, and other resources. It's, of course, all depends on the budget. So there's no right and wrong, but sometimes when you need an extra help, more hands on deck, that makes sense to go to external consultants, and that's usually whenever people come to us and see, you know, how we can help. But always, it usually starts with the problem. Yeah. So before you think about sales, you should think, okay, where do you struggle? Where is the bottleneck? And where do you need some help? And with this thought in mind, you actually can go out and look for solutions, how we can overcome it.
Yeah, it resonates to me with some of the recent hobbies I got with the golf. Yeah. And it's about the consistency. So this is the problem number one. Sometimes I can pull up great shots, like in sales. Sometimes I can close an amazing sale deal. And another day, just nothing. And it might be like really depressing. And I was thinking like, is it a problem for majority of your clients to achieve the consistency?
Look, sales, it's a skill, right? There is nothing, same as other skills as well. You need to have some sort of experience. You need to fail a bit, train a bit, and you're becoming better time over time, right? And sometimes, especially for business owners, right, you might excel in sales. And usually the business owners, they're the best salespeople that already they have in the company, because you're passionate about your business, you know what exactly it does, you're trustworthy, and basically, of course, people just work with you, they like you, and they buy your business. Usually the problem comes to sales whenever you're looking to grow and scale up, because at this point you need to bring someone else who's not as dedicated as you are to your business, basically a person on hire. And this is where it can come up a bit risky, because when you are not quite versed across the sales process, it's very hard to pick up, first of all, the right person to sell your business, because, you know, most of the time salespeople are really good at selling themselves, right? But But you also need to know how to convey the knowledge to show them how to sell your product again, because it's just hard. You know, sales getting harder and harder. And sometimes, of course, you can dedicate all times and years to excel as you do in golf. But do you really need to do that? You actually can focus on more strategic areas and bring experts, whether in-house or outsourced, to help you with the growth.
Yeah, that's probably my problem, as I think many other founders who doesn't come from sales background. My background is engineering. I love build stuff even when it doesn't make sense. But sales, of course, is something that makes sense in the first place, fuel and everything. And it reminds me also of the experience when you started to describe that there is an option to hire your own staff. And I had an experience hiring two director of sales. Of course, I think it's logical to start from the director of sales. Never tried the agency before, but they end up something like kind of mini agency of their own. They like started the conversation like, look, we need that amount of money, pretty big budgets, by the way, to hire this and that. So I was thinking like, I'm going to hire the director of sales and they probably going to do what I do, like just take a load away from me. And they started with like, oh mate, we need a team. We need two SDRs, lead gens, like back in those days, in new terms to me. And I was like, can't we start slower? You know, it just didn't make sense. So I think there is more to do with dealing with an agency. And I'm curious, do you guys start with the same approach, or you can like adjust to client needs and start slower, or there is some pattern?
No, we pretty much adjust the approach. It's there's no one approach that fits all. And the idea that actually the example you brought in, you know, bringing in the VP of sales, because if you want to have a good sales process, you need to bring someone in to think it through, right? And prepare, you know, document the things, roll out the systems, think about marketing as well. And again, sometimes, I mean, we kind of, you know, people come to us when they're looking for leads, right? But if they're looking for leads, something wrong with the in-house sales process there. And yeah, I mean, usually whenever you're looking to build your sales team within the business, it requires, you know, very high budgets, right? So but on our end, what we do, we come up, we look at your business first. We look where you struggle the most, where the gaps in the sales process. We're trying to address them, and we kind of building a roadmap. Because, you know, when you're thinking about building a sales function, this is like it's a huge elephant which you can't swallow in one piece, right? You'd rather think it through and create a roadmap where first it comes strategy, a bit of processes, systems, marketing, you know, which is, you know, marketing, it's, you know, as much as sales and marketing kind of sometimes come in a class together, but this is two hands which should work at the same time simultaneously, right? So whatever it comes, we look at the business, at your budget as well. It doesn't have to be outrageous, right? But of course, I mean, the more budget you have, the more flexible you are, the faster you can start running. Yeah, but before you invest a lot, we actually kind of come in, we set up the groundwork and test the approach as well. Because when you bring business development reps, those who are actually making the calls, sometimes they can generate your leads on the spot, but sometimes they just test the market for your new ideas. You can reevaluate your approach and kind of become stronger. So that's why you need a team, right? Yeah. And that's what the sales augmentation means. It's not just one piece in the puzzle, but it starts from strategy, processes, systems, marketing, sales, and basically up to the moment where we can convert those opportunities into revenue in the bank.
Yeah, makes sense. And it sounds a little bit, I mean, not a little bit, way logical than what I had in experience hiring people, you know, for them then to create a team, because it might not be needed, especially if they don't get into nuts and bolts and don't understand the project. I mean, we had a trial for 2-3 months, but I don't think it's enough, especially if someone doesn't have a direct background. Like if you, let's say, software development services, like my business, if you did not succeed in any sales before, it's extremely high chances, nearly 100%, that it won't be that easy at all. I mean, the guy, I'm not going to mention names, but we've been struggling to cover the client. But once he closed one deal, it's just instant ROI of his efforts. So it's a little bit tricky. And when I was like thinking about the salary, it's another point. Like I'm bringing the cash in to this initiative, right? And then I try to KPI to like get some metrics. What would mean for me to say you're doing great? For me, it's of course is a closed deal, because this means money into a business.
Right.
But when it's just leads amount, it's like doesn't make much sense to me. I mean, leads could be completely irrelevant, or I don't know. There are so many problems with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with you. So I mean, you know, leads, of course you need leads to close some business, but eventually it becomes some sort of like kind of a drug addiction, right? You always like, whenever you don't have enough pipeline, you don't close enough, you're thinking about leads, I need leads, but they can come in. It's not that hard to generate some interest, But the next question, can you convert them, right? Do you have the right offering? What is your, whenever the person comes and talks to you about, I mean, are you solution-driven or feature-driven? What is the competition like? There's so many factors, right? So, yeah, I mean, another thing is whenever you bring a salesperson, regardless how junior or experienced they are, you want to assign a KPIs, right? And at some point, salesperson comes with a price tag as well. It's quite expensive, right? So, and being in this kind of breadwinning category, you kind of want to get this ROI quite fast, right? And that's why you said this rigid KPIs. Okay, we need so many leads. Those leads should be converted within so fast, within so many months there as well. But sometimes, you know, you can bring amazing person, very talented, very smart, who does his job exactly, bring the leads, runs the meetings, but the sales are not getting converted. And because then when you actually need to stop and look what exactly, you know, how can you support the salespeople? And that's why it's always good to do it before you're bringing in the sales arm. Think about the strategy, the messaging, the marketing, your digital presence, your competition, and kind of coming up, even like when you talk about leads, but sometimes you might think about channel management. There's also so many other ways how you can generate business, right? And generate more clients.
I think it comes together right now. The word augmentation and scale up that you mentioned, I think this is a great definition of whether you need these services. Because before you solved the initial problem of converting, the problem that sales augmentation fundamentally solves is the scale and growing, right? So if you can't convert the leads you are able to find, or I don't know, who you created a good rapport before, that means something is wrong somewhere else and you are not necessarily fixing the right problem, right?
That's right. I mean, and the whole idea, you need to be leading, with the problem, right? Because the buyers are becoming super educated at the moment, right? By the time they speak to you, of course, you can present them, you know, some sort of solution, but they go and do their research after this as well, right? Mm. So at the end of the day, I mean, whenever you bring sales arms, you need to focus on, you know, how much, what type of conversion, how much you will generate as the end result, and have some sort of predictability and forecasting. But then, of course, I mean, bringing a sales, VP of sales or sales manager, actually, you need to assign realistic targets as well. So you need to be not overly optimistic about, you know, my solution, or if I'll just bring salespeople, the sales will just start falling on me, but looking at the whole picture holistically, right, and then make a decision. But also you need to react on the market as well, because you can do all the right steps, thinking about the strategy, bringing the people, right, generate those leads and still don't convert them, right? So you need, at this point of time, you need to look at and probably pivot your strategy, pivot the marketing messaging, and being quite agile in the way you approach the market.
Very, very reactive approach. All right, well, that's pretty interesting. And now I think at least I understand what sales segmentation means.
It's
and
great.
When it makes sense to come. Yeah, but I think it's essential. Sometimes people just think from who I met, they were thinking like, oh, I hired these sales guys and they automatically sell for me. No way.
There's no such thing. There's no such thing as a product that sells itself. And there's no such thing as you just bring a person and, you know, just go and do your magic. And magically, you just start, you know, the person starts bringing you money. It happens. Sometimes, you know, great things happen, but you can't rely on this. It's not scalable.
Yeah. Maybe that person then can start their own business if they're doing that well. Usually. Like why you are needed.
Usually,
right?
If you someone that talented, they can do and start their own business. That's right.
That's funny. All right. So let's speak a little bit about the personal and business goals. Let's start with the business goals. What's Lithium business goals? Goals in short term and long term?
Look, it's an amazing question. I mean, actually, you know, this point of time, we're kind of pivoting a bit our strategy. I mean, the team is growing a lot. So when we started about 3 years ago, we started on the sales, a bit of a sales as a service side, then moved to a bit of a lead generation side. But now we pivot quite a lot into the strategy development, because what I found in the years, this is one of the most crucial phases, you know, before you come up and start, as we discussed, generating those leads, focus on this side. So we bring in resources. We just partnered with another organization. We're going through the merger with another company called Infinite, which actually been a consultancy agency before. We're doubling our size in the next 2 years, which is, and of course, you know, it all comes to the revenue and getting more clients on board and bringing more value to them as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I can extract the a very important thing you mentioned. It becomes more intelligent from just, you know, selling the service. You kind of have sort of product of your own intelligent. I mean, the strategy you mentioned, right? So you probably have some framework, right? Some approach. So this is kind of you're productizing your service, right? At some point.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel, right? I mean, the sales process is the sales process. Yes, of course, now it's like it changes a lot due to the recent disruption with AI, and there's lots of other tools coming in. And, you know, the sales industry you know, is getting disrupted as all the others as well.
Yeah.
But the idea, what I found within, you know, with my background in sales and what I'm looking after, you know, running this business for this time, I can see that the strategies is the most crucial part, right? Because sometimes clients, especially when you're an outsourcer, you know, but even like if you get hired by a business client, people just want you to start generating quickly results, regardless of what the situation is, right? And in order not to, and the reason why, because, you know, it costs a lot of money, right, to bring in salespeople.
Yeah.
Right. So before you do that, that's actually how you can reduce your cost and how you can just not go out as you just described the situation with the VP of sales, right? Do we really need that much budget initially straight away, right? No, actually you don't. You need to think about this first, test the market, and then grow, you know, gradually increasing your capabilities.
I like how it sounds. I mean, I've been constantly carried away by reflecting my experience. It's like more like gambling with a very high
gambling.
High risk.
It's amazing. It's like basically like tossing a coin, right? Because you speak to a person and again with the sales, right? That's why people in sales, right? I mean, they know how to talk, they know how to sell themselves, and you know they might have great capabilities, but they just don't know how to sell your product. Whenever they come in, so it's kind of might survive, might not, but by the time they're not surviving, you spend all this money and they left to another job.
Mm. It's like mapping the specifics of any business onto their general skills capacity. Now, that makes a lot of sense. So preparation is a key. And what are your personal goals within this structure? I mean, what are your personal goals as a founder of such a company?
Yeah.
Do you like seek? I'm just giving a probably silly example, but not silly for everyone. It's like having a passive income. So you see like your business as self-sustaining, like having GM, etc. So you basically can do something else or just augment it like from the side. Or some people just enjoy being a part of the process. So there are different goals, and I'm just curious, what are yours?
Look, my first and immediate goal right now is just to pull out myself as much as I can from the operational model, because you know, being an entrepreneur and running your business, especially in the initial stages, right? It's you wear all the hats, right? Yeah. You're trying to build the processes from scratch, especially bring people on board as well. And my goal for the for this year, next year, and actually it comes with, you know, what you do as well, which is quite resonates. We're trying to create a process-driven organization as well, where I'm not the bottleneck for each and every part, which happens within the business. People don't come to me. So in a way, I'm not expecting this to become a passive income, of course, because you know this is really like rarely seen. But then, what would I do as well at this time? So I'm more looking like, I want to focus more on strategy, on strategic parts. We have a good operational team which runs all day-to-day activities. Yeah, and I can focus on more strategic engagement and growth, right? So we can actually making sure we're doing the right things and going in the right direction and still providing the best value to our clients.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think it's pretty common challenge to get away from operations, day-to-day operations.
Point of time, I found I'm being in sales organizations, like sales becoming pretty much because there's a demand, we kind of sound logical. You say as well, there is some gap in the market. So it's not that hard to bring in new clients. The problem where I found at the moment, it's to deliver a good service. And at no point of time, you don't want to grow any further up to the moment where nailed all the processes within the business. So then we can scale up without having any, negative impact on the service, right? And that's actually what takes a lot for me at this time to, how do I build the systems and train the people and retain the knowledge within our organization. So if I go away, or if key people, even a person leaves the business, we're still operational, we're still, moving with the right pace.
I think it's very wise. Like to test on this smaller volume first, make sure it's scalable to some extent before like going all in. Otherwise, the reputation is at risk. So yeah.
And it's a small market, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the reason why I started this business is because I wanted to create some positive impact around me, right? I mean, of course, it's money is great, but, being an entrepreneur, you usually take more risk than you, it's basically, it's also kind of a gamble as well when you start it. And yeah, the idea is, of course, to, create an organization that create happy clients, create happy referrals as well. And reputation is, it's quite important.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially in sales. I mean, anytime I look at, I have to provide a disclaimer. I receive a lot of cold sales messages all the time.
I wanted just to say it, yeah. So the market is saturated, right? Actually, because the barrier of entry is so low, basically any salesperson can, what do you need to start this type of business? You need a headset, a phone, a number, a basic CRM system, you're just yourself. You can call yourself growth agency, lead generation agency. And the world is already like saturated of everyone at this point of time tried one agency, another, but there's lots of bad examples, right? Yeah. And even right now, when you talk about, you know, we, you know, some companies that work in the lead generation space, it's already becoming a bit of a toxic, because for that exactly reason, because companies come to get some leads without thinking about, are they even going to convert them? Because that's why what I mentioned, it's a bit more like a drug addiction, leads, right? Where you actually need to go and look at the cause, you know, preparation first, look at the strategy, and then go with the right go-to-market messaging. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to bring a few examples that it's really, confirms what you are saying, that there were a few guys I even worked with. So they said like refund-free lead gen, something like that. They generate some leads, completely irrelevant. And they said like, of course, it's refundable, but they didn't come up with a refund. So this is more like fraud kind of scale. But there is another potential company that wanted to sell me the calls like with leads. And I was like, what I have to do with the call itself, like being something that I'm measuring against the, you know, resources usage, if it doesn't necessarily drive the sale. And I was like, okay, this is still kind of my game, right? I need to close the sale, but there are so many factors. And I was looking at the price of this call and it was like absolutely ridiculous. I was starting to think like, why I am not doing that business? Because they literally guarantee nothing and still charge very high price. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't connect the dots in my head.
Look, in a way, it depends how you look at it, right? Because there is, I mean, again, you know, the industry with such a low barrier, of course, it's a bit of a cutthroat competition, right? They can put high prices, low prices, and at the end of the day, you want quality. In reality, you don't really care how much it costs. You just want to make sure they deliver the results. But I don't know what was the price model there, but when you think about this, whenever you bring in a business development rep to your business, I mean, you still have no guarantee, right? That's the whole idea. Yeah. You still need to pay for someone's time, so they kind of work for you, which is, and then you have usually this commission model as well, right? Yeah. And then it depends how good is your process, you know, because the person might generate one lead a week, two leads a week, five leads a week, right? And that's kind of, at the end of the day, it's cost per lead acquisition price and conversion, right? That's two metrics you need to follow all the time. Again, when you think there's some offering, I really love offering whenever, you know, people also come with expectation, like we're going to pay you like 10% if you close the business as well, right? Which is eventually you can have like, you know,
classic
unreasonable service providers, unreasonable clients, right? Because I mean, if I can just get 10% of selling your product, I mean, again, I can open this same business and get all 100%, right? So someone needs to take a risk. But the idea is, because again, bringing in in-house salesperson, outsource, lots of risks there. Right, in reality, because no one can guarantee you anything. So that's why it's so important, again, to look at your, again, start first with the strategy, rethink it, test it a bit, and then go and kind of, yeah, but testing this eventually, testing will be important. Yeah.
And you support along all these stages as well?
Yeah, like, so kind of, so that's what we do right now, and that's what I saw a huge gap. I mean, and that's one of the reasons, because as I told you, at some point, you know, I want, you know, over a decade of enterprise and commercial IT software sales experience before I started this business. And my initial goal was, you know, we will do sales as a service, helping international companies to break into Australia. But then everyone just came to us and they said, we want leads. Of course, the market want leads. We provide them leads, right? That's how the business went. But then that's where I saw, you know, because whenever you are competing on a, you know, usually low prices per lead, you can't give enough time to the client actually to look at, is it the right, because usually you ask them, okay, how you generate leads? What is your message? What is the problem you solve? And you kind of, because, you know, you don't have, again, you operate on lower margins, you wrap it up very quickly. This is the message. People are trained and we go to market, we do all the right things, we generate those appointments, but then the client can't close them. Eventually, client doesn't care about these appointments. Who cares? I mean, people just care about the bank, the money in the bank, right? So so what we do right now, we support it from the beginning to, and what we also do as well, some clients, and because, you know, I'm still thinking that in many ways, having an in-house sales team, it's much more beneficial than working with an outsourced team, right? Because whenever the people in-house, their retainment is much higher, people can grow within your business, move from one position to another as well, and it's much more scalable and much more under your control. So we have clients who actually act more like as a fractional sales managers. So not just bringing our in-house resources, which we can bring at any time, but we can also help develop in-house resources too, where they hire, train, do all the work that the manager should be doing, working with the salespeople. Because again, salespeople in isolation, you need someone to, I mean, as any other people, you need some managers to oversee them. And this is a component which usually not taken into consideration.
Yeah, that's interesting. It might be a very, I would say, good mild start for people to start educating themselves in the beginning without committing too much for the service. Because service is always associated with some people's time, and it takes more than just a consultancy. Maybe you can just have a, you know, shorter version, do your job, and then have a better understanding whether you need to hire those extra people to do something that you are not prepared for, right?
Yeah, but this makes sense because, again, you can build it gradually because, I mean, it depends on your budget, right? But you can start generating, you know, someone show you how to generate leads by your own because, of course, this is some traditional things like networking, referrals, right? But at some point, it's not quite scalable, right? Then depends on the budget. I mean, we can set up, or you can set up as well. This, as I said, this, we're not reinventing the wheel. The process is there, right? You just need someone to come in and develop it for you. We can generate digital engagement over LinkedIn, emails, other channels, then gradually close your deals. Then you can start bringing salespeople because the process is already working, right? So whenever, because there's still time for an onboarding, right? The person that comes and joins your business depends on the complexity of the product or service you offer. It takes time for someone to come in and understand how to pitch, make their mistakes. And, you know, typical onboarding of sales development rep or say, it's two, you know, 1, 2, 3 months, right?
Yeah.
And, but when you have process that works first, it also helps the rep to start learning, you know, seeing, you know, what type of leads coming in, work along with you, and yeah, and eventually take the rein in their hands and maximize their potential, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that's a lot of information. I also process. I mean, I'm it's an interesting approach. It's like, you know, normally back in my business, there's a huge question like whether it's agency or direct. Now it seems like way more sense to tap into someone's deep expertise, scratch it, use it, and then naturally build the bond with such a provider because I think the intent will be more genuine in building the partnership. So I gotta move to the next question, even though it's like really interesting to see this. It's not so common. I'm speaking about the sales because I think this is always in the entrepreneur's mind, like, how can I do my sales better? But what do you like most in your business and what you don't like? You know, what do you hate, let's say, absolutely?
What I do like, I mean, I was always a bit of an entrepreneur in my, you know, in my heart. So sometimes I've been on those meetings and, you know, people, lots of entrepreneurs sit in and someone asks them a question, okay, why are you doing this business? And people give some logical answers. That's, you know, my passion. But my answer, I had no choice. I felt like all my life, I had no choice because initially, by trade, I'm a navigation officer. So I was, you know, actually I was, the profession I chose initially was driving, you know, big container ships around the world. I came to Australia, got my captain certificate, was too bored. And I was always thinking about, okay, I need to start my business. So as soon as I landed on shore, finished my graduation, my studies, I opened my first business here, which was a bit of a wholesale retail. I understood nothing in the area. I got some investors, got some international product, failed. You know, it was like for eight months, lots of activities, found a job. And then I moved to sales, IT sales, corporate sales. But I always felt this void, you know, within. I always wanted to have it, you know, my own, right? I saw the gap and I didn't feel fulfilled, right, in this area. So what I really like, you know, I love my job, right? It's hard. And what I don't like, it's like it's sleepless hours. It's like being a bit, you know, that chews a lot of time, but that's what I'm working on right now. That's one of my goals, you know,
pull
myself from the operations. What I absolutely love. So, you know, I'm just waiting to start my job, right? I mean, I don't feel depressed. I feel always challenged. I always kind of solving interesting problems each and every time the clients come in with different products, you know, and it's kind of, it's a bit of a logical exercise, but also like the process, it's always interesting, but.
Sold.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I mean, like someone who has such motivation, it's amazing. I mean, that means you're driven by the process and sometimes it can kill you, of course. That's why I try to find the work-life balance.
That's what I feel. I mean, the last year, I mean, I feel like, you know, I can sleep 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, but now, like, you know, I watch lots of podcasts. Apparently the sleep is the most important part, right? And I can see, you know, obviously, you know, this is what I want to regain back, right? This is major focus and I'm kind of doing this already, right? But, you know, but in the beginning, especially when you start running fast, and I didn't expect, you know, the growth we had within the first, like, literally 6 months, right? And that's, you know, it's a joyful journey, but, you know, it's time to take, you know, the time back and kind of focus more sustainable. So even after 10, 20 years, I can still enjoy the business when it maybe becomes, you know, like a passive income, who knows, right?
Yeah. So you kind of managed to answer both questions. So I can assume the only negative side is just the hardship that...
I don't even see the negative side at the moment, right? I mean, in reality, I enjoy it. I just see that this is the problem, right?
Yeah, work-life balance, like, mainly, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, there is some drive which actually moves me forward. So it's not like I'm forced myself to not sleep. I'm not sleeping just because I'm just started doing something and get too involved.
Your brain starts working. Don't let your system shut down.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's a trick.
I enjoy it all. I mean, it's a, and eventually it's just a learning curve, right? Because I'm looking like 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead, and I just see I'm on the right path. But this is this point of time, that's what I should be doing, right? But being open-minded and, you know, with wide open eyes as well, I can see what should they be, you know, what the next thing I should address.
Yeah, yeah, I see. That's interesting. Okay. That the next question is kind of, it will be very hitting to the nail because it's about the schedule. Like, can you provide any routine? I mean, daily routine and how you handle all of that. What fuels you to? I mean, some not like business challenges, but more like how your daily CEO lifestyle looks like to help you survive through this onslaught of tasks and stay productive.
Yeah. So look, I'm a very process-driven person, actually, right? So my answer to everything is, okay, we have a problem coming in, right? So, and whenever I explain it once, I'm trying to build a process for the next time, or a SOP as well, operational procedures. So whenever the next time people have this question, they know where to go, where to find the answer, and do it themselves, right? So this is, I spend a lot of time there building up this library. Sometimes it's not the answer because, you know, I might be very process-driven, but what I found is some people, they're not, right? You can give them all the cards, all the keys to the kingdom, right? And they would never use it. They still prefer to come back to you. So my next phase of what I decided, you know, I'm just training key personnel who I can work with, who understand where to go and find it, and start allocating subject experts in each and every industry. So not industry, but I mean side of the business, right? So they eventually trying to push people come to me, and I'm just starting to pull them back to the right people they should talk to. I was answering, I forgot the question. Sorry. Yeah,
what's about your personal, like, do you do, like, I don't know, gym in the morning? Like, what helps you personally to go through this? Yeah.
So I do train a bit. I mean, once, you know, I would love to train much more. So when I was like a happy employee, I was like, you know, all I was focused is my health, you know, waking up at 4 a.m., go for a run, you know, 5 days a week. I was, you know, I was actually a bit too obsessed with this, I think, back then, right? But now I'm just trying to maintain myself operational, more or less. So it comes back to, like, I mean, I have a kid who is 7 years old, and he goes to jiu-jitsu classes in the daytime. I pick him up. So one of the benefits of, you know, having your business, because I can build, you know, my time a bit around the schedule and what I want to do, spending more time with the kid, right? So pick him up from school, he goes to jiu-jitsu classes, but at the same time, this is my 40 minutes, which actually I already have to be with him to train 15 minutes, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to wake up in the morning. I will jump straight to the work or afternoon. So I kind of balance my life around my family, right? If they have Saturday classes, he swims, and I picked up strategically a pool where, you know, I have two kids actually. Both of them swim at the same time under supervision. I swim as well, right? So this is, so at the moment I'm doing like three classes of body weight training. One training a week for swimming, and my recent, like, I just bought a skateboard. I don't know, it looked cool, you know. I thought, you know, I came to Australia, I always wanted to surf, but I think this train, it maybe, you know, it just requires sharks. Too much time. And sharks, man, yeah. Look, I'm deeply stressed by the sharks. I saw this crazy movies, but skateboard, it looks quite easy. But I bought all the gear. As soon as I stand on the board, I felt so great for 5 minutes up to the moment when I felt on the ground, you know, that wasn't fun. But now I'm fully geared, have all the equipment to protect myself. And again, it's our time with the kids. So they train, I train. And that's a bit of a fun, yeah.
It's lovely. You like synchronize with your family. I think it's beautiful because it definitely takes a lot of time and efforts, and you find the enjoyment in participation with them.
You're trying to optimize, right? Because if you're all the time optimizing stuff, so now thinking, okay, and I mean, when can I pull out this? Because it's like business, and this is a lot of obligations at home as well, right? Yeah. And you need to be around too. So, I mean, and you need to be healthy and take care of yourself, but where do you find the time, right? So that's kind of I'm trying to do around their schedule, but they benefit and I benefit too. Right?
Yeah.
It's also create a family culture, right?
Yeah, so, and they see you happy, like you participate, you're not just like sitting,
trying, kind of.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing. Now we're driving into more main section, even though we covered a lot of aspects actually from this intro part. And we're going to speak a little bit about how you drive the process in Elysium and what tools you use for engaging with the client. Let's say, you know, someone like me who tries to fix the consistency with sales, well, how would you proceed with getting the first contact? What would be the system that would help you assist with that? And as far as I understood, like, metrics plays a huge role in your business. So we will speak a little bit about how you track the progress and efficiency of any person involved in the sales augmentation process, and maybe some more, not like miscellaneous, but I would say operational necessities such as generation invoices, SOVs, contracts. Maybe you can share some tools that help you significantly. You mentioned you are a big fan of efficiency, and I'm curious to learn a bit more. So let's start with this first step. Like, what the process would look like to get in touch with your client, to engage.
In terms of the customer engagement, right? So sometimes it depends, you know, the clients comes in different shapes and forms. Some already have established processes, like it depends on the size. And sometimes, you know, there we don't have much to change. We actually adapt to our client systems, because one of the main goals is, I mean, we kind of outsource provider, right? But we want to be perceived and operate as well as a natural extension of the team without bringing in too much unnecessary systems. If they have one, we will use whatever they have, right? Whether it's a Salesforce, CRM system, telephony, and so on. But some of the clients at the growth stage, they come literally with nothing, right? So for the clients like that, I mean, obviously in sales, you need a CRM system. This is a must. This is a standard thing, especially when you're looking to scale up and bring external people. Like if you do it yourself, maybe a notebook is enough, right? And you know all your clients by hand and you meet them on a, you know, on a golf session. But here what we do first and foremost in terms of customer communication, so we did onboard reporting is super, it's necessary, right? And reporting, so in sales process, of course you want to get to the revenue, right? But this could be a long journey, because a sales cycle could be 6-5 months, you know, 7 months, depends what the customer, what the product or service the customer offers. But so before that, you need to monitor all the relevant activities of how the team performs, which is comes to, you know, standard things like calls, emails, data, what time of the day are calls being made, tasks, and all that engagement, right? And usually to create this sort of dashboards, you use different systems like AirCall for telephony, which pulls all the calls data, call recording. We're using a bit of, you know, LinkedIn automation tools, email automation tools. So we combine them all in kind of one quite sophisticated dashboard. What we also onboarded is a system, like it's a ClickUp, right? Which is a bit more like it's a project management tool. And we kind of, and again, I don't know, it probably comes from my passion to processes and automation and being everything structured and in one place. We basically adapted this system in which covers this way or another. It actually covers lots of areas, even recruitment, kind of high-level sales operations, reporting, even payment, you know, invoicing as well, partially, right? Of course, it's not, it requires some manual work, automation, but in reality, I mean, I can see it's quite a versatile tool. So for the customer communication as well, so we kind of create, but we try to keep it in one place. So sometimes I can see it could be an overkill, you're providing two dashboards, because again, you don't want to drag anyone's attention from their core business. And no one really want to do it, because actually we've been hired to manage this all. But for internally, for myself, for our team as well, we have kind of a few places where we look at and measure the activities.
Yeah, I think I was thinking about, like, when you mentioned like extending the client's existing ecosystem, it would go into contradiction with the capability of your team to report, because if it's not like known system and you must provide some metrics to justify or just simply report what has been done, introduces some challenges. So it's naturally comes to some centralized place when you can compile the dashboard and to easily answer the question, what's going on, where we are, what are the metrics. And as you said, like process wise, you want to track as much as possible to then provide a conclusion or, I don't know, any feedback in terms of what could be the problem, if it is any problem, right? Like if we're doing a great job at, I don't know, generating leads, right? We need to understand, like, if that's true, and we can, you know, exclude this variable from the equation and look somewhere else where the problem is, right?
That's right. I mean, and you know, data, it shows, it's usually you can find if you have a problem and you look at the data, even the highlights, you can find where the problem is, more or less, especially nearly in any activities, but also in sales as well, right? But from our perspective, I mean, we look at the, you know, transparency is super important, right? Because this is already not enough trust and other people, salespeople, outsourcers coming in. You want to show, that's why we have actually, sometimes we overkill it with dashboards, but as long as the customer has a question, we can show and we can immediately show where the answer lies in, right? And we can educate a bit more. But yeah, I mean, ideal world, right? I mean, sometimes when clients come with their system, they don't want to change. Let's say they have using Salesforce, we're not Salesforce experts. We can't do much there. So then we can use kind of other dashboards, which provide partially the view. But, you know, it depends on the customer as well, as long as they're happy.
Yeah, but makes sense.
Ideally, should go everything to one place, right? I mean, Salesforce quite, or HubSpot or other CRM system quite capable to absorb the information and integrate with all the other tools. It's usually, you know, we're using, you know, one of the main components whenever you pick up a CRM system, because there's so many of them, you need to pick up a good marketplace.
Yeah.
So the more system integrated, the more easy and seamless the integration, and you can create reports. I mean, the more visibility you'll have overall.
That makes sense. Like, and anytime the customer wants to check a little bit more information, you can invite them and just say like, hey, you can come self-serve if you want anytime. I don't know, right? Do you have this kind of dashboard visibility?
So our goal is, right, I mean, we come in as a partners, right? And partners, I mean, we don't have a goal to retain the client forever. I mean, we'd love to, but the client has a choice, right? And the idea is like our goal is to elevate their sales process from start to end. And we want to show them, you know, what you should be doing. Now, it's an educational process, right? By setting up the systems, looking at the right metrics, we also educate the clients as well. Depends, you know, again, how prepared they come, you know, for this type of engagement. But we also educate them what they should be doing whenever they onboard salespeople in a situation where they just want to start doing this themselves. So we can pull out, leave them full operational system, create a very happy, referenceable customer, and, you know, move on to others.
Got it. Well, it's more like outward right now. I'm curious about a little bit of more inward. Do you employ any systems or processes to control the internal team? Like, do you time track? Do you create schedules for people, like workload management?
We don't track much. So one of the things, so the unique, I get niche where I operate, I mean, salespeople hate administration, like really hard. I mean, if you ask a salesperson, even to put a record in CRM, it's already really hard work, right? So therefore, you try to automate everything as much as you can, right? They make a call, it actually goes in, the less they do, the happier, you know, the more focused they are on what's important there, right? So I try to incorporate time tracking, right? But I mean, it's unrealistic for salespeople to follow this time unless this fully automatic, right? So ClickUp is not definitely, it has some functionality there for time tracking, but probably as you know, it's not mature enough, right? And it's, I think they recently introduced the timesheets as well. And, you know, we looked at this and we can't work with that, right? But so the way how I measure activities, personally, the way it's a workaround. I'm not saying this is the most efficient way at the moment, but everyone within the team right now, they fill up daily reports, right? And they fill up weekly reports, which is like high level data, right? And we can, I mean, these reports are manual, right? And one of the reasons, we can automate those reports, it's not a problem, right? But one of the reasons I want also salespeople as well to look at their numbers each and every day and thinking about whether they, you know, because we meet now every day with nearly each and every team members, right? We have team leaders and we have the structure. So each and every day, we look at your last day activities, next day activities, your plan. And by filling up those reports, you create a higher accountability culture, right? People getting more thoughtful about, you know, whether they focus on the right activities or wrong activities. They're thinking about the conversation they're going to have next day. But look, ClickUp, it's basically the system what we use a lot for reports, for task management, which also sometimes it's not very smooth, right? What I found again with the ClickUp, we onboarded salespeople and I created amazing onboarding process, like day number one, you do this, day number two, hundreds of tasks, you know, segmented by the days and weeks. And for me, it was so simple. You just go by the order. People came in and they were just lost. They just didn't look
too
at
much.
It. Yeah. I mean, and then I got the feedback, right? Okay. And I couldn't understand why. I mean, my first motive was, okay, I mean, the people are not motivated enough why they're not doing this. But then I just realized it's just too much, you know, and it's not for everyone. So therefore, we moved from this function. We're building up team leaders who knows how to use it. And they're the one who already, like, we're not enforce task management there. We more like assign task for leaders there.
That's pretty interesting. So I got to summarize a few things that I found that I didn't ever thought about that. First of all, you said even taking a small responsibility to track what you're up to right now, it probably creates significant cognitive load for salespeople.
Yeah.
I just had another customer in our system when they were like doubling down on automation with account managers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same. They don't worry about the precision or making people too accountable because it might jeopardize their productivity. So I now understand this part. And also when you mentioned this onboarding process with a lot of steps, I think it's the same problem with cognitive load. They can't just keep track in their head. Unless it's probably something like, I don't know, like in the game, you have like, it's a quest and you always like remind it. You don't keep it in your memory, you know, like you go sequentially. But I don't think in reality, it's always going to be sequential. Sometimes you might change the course, let's say, of this quest, right?
Yeah.
You must like branch the logic. And this is exactly what creates, in my opinion, the struggle here.
So what we do right now, right? So the way how we address it, we simplify the onboarding to really, like, it's really, you start from the most important part, you explain about the business, you explain about the targets, the goals, And then, so before onboarding was around like, you know, really lots of theory, lots of administration, lots of a bit of a self-learning path. But right now we want people to start, you know, go to and start doing their task as fast as they can. So we can see now where the gaps are and then assigning specific, like more like prescriptive onboarding to where they're, you know, where they, yeah, where they have these gaps.
Yeah, like
their knowledge.
More like guided. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, because like rather than creating one and just do there and click up, click, finish, 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 we just, it's like, do you know this? I don't know if you ever heard about this lion tamers.
No.
So once you know, like this is like, and that's the idea how the brain, human brain, or not just human actually, it actually shows it's in animal kingdom as well. So if you ever saw the old lion tamers, you know, in the old pictures, right? They would come with a chair, right? And the chair has four legs. So usually they come to the lion, and you can actually go and Google this, with the chair which points on them four legs, and they have this sling in their right hand, and everyone thinking that the lion is afraid of sling. Lion is not afraid of sling. He actually looks at the chair. And I'm just pointing at the chair there, right? But he looks at this four legs, right? And he doesn't know which one of those will attack him. So the lion doesn't know, like he looks at the four of them and he just, you know, he actually move backwards. So the idea again with the tasks management, if you're throwing them too many tasks, people get, and that's kind of get lost, where do I start? And that's kind of indecision, right? It's drain their
chest
energy.
Paralysis.
Yeah, and that's kind of they pull off. And that's kind of, I remember I read it once, like a few years ago, and that's basically what, you know, people, you know, some people build differently, right? Some people task driven, process driven, you know, but some people don't. They just get to, especially if they never did it before, right? And suddenly they jump into this organization, super process efficient, and they just too much, too many tasks.
That's challenging. I mean, from the way you describe it, it seems like constructing the process for these experts could be a task of its own, right? I didn't expect that.
So that's kind of, it's really like, so what we do, right? Because we train salespeople, right? And we basically, you know, I mean, we have a process, we have strategy. This is, we have consultants, myself and the partners, but eventually we bring in sales, you know, capabilities, right? Yeah. And those people need to be recruited, trained. And when you deal with people, right, and that's why sometimes you can see, you know, some technical driven, some can measure their time, some don't, but you know, they have other strong qualities. So it's basically, yeah, you need to be really like prescriptive. Look at each and every person, you brought them in and then you test them and you measure where they're good at over the course of the next month. Because as I said, during the interview, it's very hard to uncover all the hidden areas, because an interview, everyone look great. As long as they understand the sales process, they sound good, you pick up, you know, the best person you want to go with. But there is no, there are no unicorns there, right? You always, someone come up and you will need to decide and understand how you make it happen, right? How you upskill and train them.
I bet pretty hard to create a universal framework in such circumstances.
No, it's like that's the whole point. You can't do it unless your recruitment process is very stringent. Maybe you apply different testing and other stuff, and you know exactly who it should be. But again, in sales, like it's driven by human, right? And human, they have like emotional intelligence and other parts, and you know.
I thought like dealing with software engineers is super hard, but now I have to reconsider. Sales people are kind of
the grass is over greener somewhere else, right? Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, something new every day. All right. So in terms of like the ecosystem you build with these tools, does it help you to automate the process towards like generating the invoices to the clients and, you know, running some financial data about the efficiency of each individual or organization in total? Or you still use something like spreadsheets?
No, we don't use spreadsheets. We actually use ClickUp again. I mean, I just instrumented ClickUp, which is kind of a spreadsheet. Basically, I mean, what's the difference, right? I mean, it's just a bit more formed, a bit. It's all in one place. So it's, but in a way, yeah, I would say if you put this question, yeah, we're using a kind of ClickUp as a spreadsheet for invoices. And then, it's still manual process right now, yeah.
But it allows you to see, like, let's say, gross and net profits of the organization from each such invoice generated?
So,
kind of dashboard over you.
Again, I kind of build a bit manually, right? So whenever you come at the project, and this is one of the things which I have to improve, right? To get back some of my time, but we do calculate the profitability, which is in theory one. We put some, factors, which, you know, probably our assumption is wrong, you know, like 10%, 20%, because something always happens. You need to throw more resources, but yeah, we're not there yet. I mean, we're not there yet in terms of profitability. Yeah.
Okay.
Not profitability, in terms of measuring how profitable at each project at each point of time, right? Because I saw amazing capabilities, what you showed me with WorkLayer, right? And it was like really clear, really transparent. You can see it each and every point of time. Yeah, it was really like, I was very impressed with that, but we don't have it right now.
Yeah. And I think like in WorkLayer, we basically map the quantitative part of the data through the time tracked. So basically we sell time in the first place. Like for majority of our customers, they sell their time.
Yeah.
Either they, on the front end to the customer, it's fixed price, a time and a material contract. It doesn't really matter because there is always like internal calculation of time spent because this is what expenses come into a labor, right?
Yeah.
So these allows us to have this automation. But if, let's say, the calculation of either profitability of your organization is bound to the, qualitative characteristics, which you can't automatically measure. It's literally impossible by any tool. Let's say if you remunerate someone based on their sales performance, like a bonus, it becomes way more complicated to track, you know, overall organization, profitability.
Look, it still is, right? I mean, because whenever we start, we always have a base component, right? Yeah. Of course, obviously the base should be already profitable, right? But then there's also additional thing as bonuses, right? Which we also, depends on the model we engage the customer engage us, I would say, right? But no, I can clearly see that how this, this part could be improved, and I'm sure the ways are, but we just, we're just in infancy at the moment. You know, this is a bit of a teething problem, so we're scaling business, right? Yeah.
Well, that's fine as long as you stay positive, right?
Oh, when I'm staying positive, that's for sure. I'm always looking, yeah.
Yeah, because like I found that the most challenging part when you have money in the bank, yeah. But it's something like, as I call it, like unrealized capital,
yeah.
Because you didn't do the job for you've been paid for. You just paid up front, for example, and this
is
a problem.
I think that's what the conversation we had with you last time, and we kind of discussed this point. And actually, the funny thing, I actually did went home and I did look at my clients and I started to look, at the profitability. And I found that some clients actually, it looks like more like a relationship driven business, right? Where we're kind of friends and, we like, I like them. We do lots of whatever we can. And this doesn't make any sense commercially, right? To kind of from the business perspective to do this. And I looked at everyone just did, a bit of kind of a manual. The funny thing, I never looked at this before we spoke with you last time. It was for me like kind of, I came up with whenever we onboarded the customer, right? But then initially it's looked good, right? And it's looked good numbers. But along the way, we try to add more service and more service, and then being across everywhere as a business owner, being like a kind of the biggest bottleneck within the business, I didn't keep my focus. And some of the customers was pretty much very high profitability. They didn't get enough attention. And it's kind of this type of tools, whenever I looked at what WorkLayer does, it actually provides like unbiased picture, what you should be focused on, what customers, what type of profitability you should be driving within the business, and gives more clarity around, creating a more scalable business model, right? Because if you don't have that, I mean, it's very easy to make a mistake running business for 2 years and then just figure out that actually you own too much money, which you can't pay out.
Yeah, or you could be just less profitable than you thought, and you started to think like maybe I should just went back to job or whatever.
That's right. Or you like sometimes like in some businesses are really like growth driven in terms of like let's add more people and more people. We need to double our size, triple our size. And I'm kind of in this way as well, right? Because that's how we can scale up by kind of selling services and hours and so more. But sometimes you just see by adding more people and adding additional because people need management, people need tools behind them, and at some point, this might be not the most advantageous point. Maybe you should just actually drop the people and do maybe some additional services, which is improve the margins, maybe premium services, and this makes much more sense, right? So
yeah, but it's still exciting time from the tool set you're already using. It still provides a great clarity already.
It does. I mean, for the way, I mean, still it's a really like it's in a small business phase, right? I mean, I don't know if it's even small. It's actually 12 people. I don't know. Does
still
it fall either micro
it's
or small?
It's still small.
No, I'm not saying we meet.
I don't know what micro is.
I don't know. It's kind of right, but I mean, within the tools, we did quite a good job there, right? I mean, I believe so. But I know that the next step should be, improved because with this model, it's good enough for where we are at the moment, but it's not good enough for where we want to be in a year.
Yeah. One last thing, I just want to add to that, like the processes and tools from. Reflecting from my experience, it was the same problem before I extracted myself from my business.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I'm going to hire at a chief operation officer, convert him or her into GM, general manager. how they're going to run the job I used to run. Yeah. They must have enough data and information to make decision timely. Otherwise, business losing money. And I wanted always to focus their performance based exactly on how much company earns, because they must think as a founder. Otherwise, they would just do whatever they've been asked to do with not much incentive.
That's right. I mean, people just tend to do... especially, you know, you as a business owner or anyone else, right? We have this mindset, but we need to understand that people who work for us, they basically, it's a hired labor, they think differently. They might work from, you know, they might come to work from 9 p.m. to whatever, 5 p.m., do all their job, do some tasks, right? But, you know, again, they might lose focus very easily, thinking they're doing a great job. But then at the end of the time, when you look at the numbers, you see just doesn't make any sense. So this is like a really like how I said, you extracted yourself from the business. Yeah. And the idea of, kind of how you can shift their focus, right? Being more like business driven, like kind of thinking like as a business owner does.
Hmm. Okay. And I'm curious, like in this whole onset, did you try the AI in this process?
In terms of what?
Well, basically just I'm curious whether AI helped you in the journey of setting up the processes, like, you know, towards this automation. Because, you know, AI is pretty popular right now, but
yeah.
I already talked to some guests. We've been agreed on it cuts mediocrity right now really well. It doesn't do enough to get better, because probably if it would be that good, that will be a huge human revolution. I don't know. So I'm just curious whether it helps in your business in any way. Like, maybe it helps compile, I don't know, cold messages or fixing some grammar or spelling or tone. Like, do you use any tools?
Absolutely. I mean, AI, it's definitely, it's an, you know, one of the areas where hire people, right? And ask them, how do you use AI? I mean, now you can hear this less and less, but people say, yeah, I don't believe in AI. AI is not, it's actually shows people not moving with the time, right? You might like it, might not like it, but this is a necessity. It's a tool. It helps us being more efficient. You know, first and foremost, I use it every day, hundreds of times a day, being not a native English speaker, for instance, right? Obviously, I do check my emails, you know, with AI and other, so I first craft them. What I found with AI, because it becomes pretty much generic. If you just rely on AI, it just sounds like it sounds cool, but it sounds exactly as all the other people who use AI. Yeah. So one of the tricks I use is actually how you not sound as AI, right? And that's a bit of a struggle, right? I mean, because especially in sales, like before when I started this career, I mean, you could craft a good email and you standing out because your email is good, straight to the point. And this was kind of your competitive edge. Now it's this type of democratized. I don't know if you can use this term. Anyone can craft an email which sounds like follow the structure. So now you need to do something else, right? So in terms of our approach, for instance, like, we just need to sound more human than, you know, the human sounded before AI came in, like really short, even sometimes making spelling mistakes, you know. But in a way, how it helps us, yeah, definitely, you know, text, messaging, processes. I mean, I know, like, we do, I kind of actually just started to explore it recently in terms of like writing standard operational procedures. AI can help a bit, right? But on the other side, I mean, the way, you know, people get fatigued because AI is everywhere. I mean, you can't read anymore, right? You see the long text. I can see people just, you know, they just don't want, just too painful for the eyes. They just, the shorter it is, the more simple it is. You need to use the prompts as well. But AI definitely comes in and it's going to disrupt our industry from every angle, right? And from emails, LinkedIn, even a voice as well, because there's lots of progress going on up there, which is quite amazing and depressing at the same time. Because, you know, like in 2, 3, 4 years, you most likely will have outbound AI agent, which sounds much better than the majority, 95% of the sale, you know, the people that do sound on the call, which would eventually create a problem, right? Because, I mean, would people answer their phones? Would they answer the emails? Would they answer LinkedIn? I mean, what other channels do you have to communicate, right? So, yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, I think that people will develop naturally the resistance to whatever that sounds AI-ish. Like, I already find my brain trained right now to spot if it's AI produced kind of content, like weird words like revolutionized, unveiled, all of that stuff. You can quickly find them.
But 2 years later, I mean, probably this is going to be solved, right?
I don't know. Because, you know, I think people are more, I mean, because we are prone to make mistakes, we sound more unique, no matter how weird it sounds, because we are imperfect. That makes us interesting to each other because we love the change and serving the change. AI is very uniformal. And I believe people will get tired of reading AI. I mean, I don't want to watch AI-generated movies or read AI-generated books. At the moment I realize that, I'll drop it right away, no matter how whoever gonna say it's useful it is, because to me it's a little bit repulsive. It's like, am I gonna live inside the world surrounded by robots or people? Like, what are we doing
That's
here?
That's true, but what if, like, you know, like, I mean, we're unique in the way we are, right? Yeah. But we know that, you know, let's say you write this podcast, right? And this is like hundreds of hours of podcasts, and then AI comes and analyze you. I mean, can they replicate you or not? And speak the way you speak, learning your language, your tone of voice, you know, and all the other stuff. And probably four years later, I mean, we would probably delete all the podcasts, so no one can. I don't know how it's gonna work, right? So that's kind of, whenever I look at this, I'm kind of amazed. Of course, obviously, it's an amazing revolution, right? What's going on right now. But in a way, I don't know, being kind of stressed a bit, because, I mean, what does it really mean for the industry? I mean, are we, especially for the sales and, you know, sales operations, how are we going to generate this new client? Is it falls back just on networking and referrals? I'm sure we'll find out. This is not much time to be stressed about this. But also each and every day, because sales is such an important function within every business, each and every day there's another new solution, like, which tends to revolutionize the sales process. And this is lots of them, right? AI driven. And it's like, initially I tried to follow and test each and every one. Now I can't bother anymore. This is like this type of fatigue. The another product comes in.
I'm just trying to wait
when this wave go on, and then some you know, proven solutions remain there, so we can actually just adapt them and then be like, you know, it's not a competitive edge. It's going to be just basically a new standard, right? If you don't use AI, you're irrelevant, you're out, you just can't perform.
So generally it's less practical still, like, early on, but it makes sense to stay up to date. And I can't share much, but we are working on the product to help counteract the amount of news you're seeing and make it more, I would say, customized to individuals, to your preference. There will be upcoming events.
That's nice.
In the CUB, by the way, a pitch night, and I think the product will be revealed there. I really want to use it myself because I have the same problems.
Optimize the new, okay.
Yeah, too much information.
No.
Okay. Cool. I think we covered pretty much everything, and it was amazing to learn about how you run this business and how unique it is, at least from what I've heard. It's very different in terms of, like, pretty much everything.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I mean, like, normally, I mean, I worked with marketing people, design people, etc. It's not that critical to track the qualitative metrics, to be honest. It's not that critical because kind of people spend time to develop something. You see the output with sales. It's more like ethereal, like goal happened. I mean, it's either close project, I mean, client or not. And it makes things more transactional, I would say. And it makes it more challenging to run this business from my perspective. Because, like, again, just to give example from my part, the client comes with the requirements, we build the product, here's the product, end of story. If it would be in the sales, it would be like, some clients wanted that, by the way. They come to us, say, like, build us this thing. We build it, then they say, like, it's not being sold. Customers don't want it. I'm like, it's not our problem. We have built it.
They come to you. Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's some inadequate clients. They were like, I mean, I'm not building business for you. Yeah. I mean, it was like meant to be creating the technical solution following your requirements. We're not building the business.
That's what, you know, whenever I think sometimes it's quite beneficial to work with the early on startups before they invest all the money just to test the ideas, because as an entrepreneurial startup, you know, you're driven by a mission. You like, that's why, and kind of a product and features. And you forgot just to ask the market, are they going to pay market? And, you know, how actually, you know, is anyone going to buy it at the end?
It's classic in startups. Yeah. I mean, things are changing right now, but I'm just showing the example that the sales is exactly as transactional. If there is no kind of successful outcome of specific work, and it's hard to measure. I mean, the sale must be closed, but let's say the business ignores the amount of efforts that have been invested, like time, lead, I mean, finding the lead, having the call, etc. So it makes, to me, it more complicated. And I think this is one of the major parts of any business. Like, there is a fundamentally, like, black box business doing something, but there is also sales and there is a hiring. So it kind of becomes sort of, I would say, essential.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very interesting to learn how you drive this entire operational suite into this room. And no wonder it's challenging that it's still struggling. I mean, that's a lot. Well, that's really cool. Yeah. And I have one last question for you. Yeah, before we wrap up, I'm asking it, you know, catching off guard the gas, so beware. It's actually not that bad. What you can share about yourself that is not mentioned on the LinkedIn, something that, you know, people don't know about you. For example, some of the guests share that they've been part of a music band, you know?
the most interesting part, you know, one of the things I've been once doing ballet classes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
When I was a kid, you know, I was growing up in this traditional Soviet family, right?
Was it your decision?
No, of course not. And I wanted to do boxing, right? But then I was actually sent to ballet, and then I was sent to piano classes, and I hated it. You know, eventually I just discontinued ballet, luckily, after a few, you know, but piano I was forced to finish piano. And like, you know, I tried to escape as much as I could. I've been pulled off from all the sport classes, boxing, karate, because I would break my musical fingers. Yeah. Do you see my fingers? They're small and fat and, you know, and short, and I couldn't take any. It was like, and I was still like, I was had to finish piano, man. Yeah.
That's interesting.
But now when I'm 40, you know, now I can actually finally start seeing the value in this because I have a piano at home. My wife plays. Oh. And then suddenly it becomes like I put some notes. Gosh, I can read this. And it becomes always, you know, like 1 hour meditation. And actually now, like, I'm not on the level when I was back then. I hate it, but now actually I do enjoy it.
Yeah,
it took
20 beautiful.
Years, 30 years to get to this realization.
So you can get back and start playing the piano back
that's
again.
That's it. You know, as soon as I extract myself from the business, I open in the piano career.
It takes time.
Yeah.
I play electric guitar and it's now not that enjoyable. It's like work, actually, not to forget the skills. But I'm not going to, when I talk about that, but I understand that you want to have a clear mindset, no rush, just sit and enjoy.
Yeah, good time.
Right, well, thank you very much for coming today, Alex. It's an amazing story, and come to Elitium. I think the best way to find and get in contact with you through LinkedIn, right?
Yeah, sure. That would be easy. You can find, Klesinger. I think there's only one there online.
All right.
Go straight to me.
Awesome. I'll probably will be the next.
Right.
All right. Thanks for your time, and have a nice rest of the week.
Thanks.
Right, thanks for